on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog that I see. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog of God's feet. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run it down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Lots more news, of course, for our people. And I saw this item not so long ago, and I guess I put it aside. It's perhaps not the most vital thing we've ever covered, but it's still nonetheless interesting. And it's about former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. And where is that thing? Oh, yes, here. Former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. And he's done rather well from, guess what? Pot! Yeah, that's right. No, I didn't say he's a pothead. He might be, but no, I don't know that for a fact. No. He's done okay from marijuana. Mulroney cannabis paid $13.9 million. Who would pay a former Prime Minister $13.9 million? Former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney has made nearly $14 million since joining the board of directors of New York-based cannabis company Acreage Holdings in 2018. What, in 2 years? Wow. In a report published Tuesday by the Toronto-based Bedford Consulting Group, Mulroney was deemed to be among the highest paid directors of a cannabis company. His total compensation, including base salary, annual bonus, equity, that's shares-based awards and options-based awards, and pension, was reported to be
$878,000. Like for 2 years. He, as a director. Is that right? Director, yeah. Usually, directors of a company get a stipend, and then they get a certain per diem for attending meetings and transport, if that's necessary. But he, I have trouble understanding this. Mulrooney gets a salary. An annual bonus, options, and a pension. Well, the guy's already 80 or so. Well, why would he get a pension anyway? It's just mind-boggling. You wonder what incredible skill does he bring to this company? I mean, I suppose it's their business, but. He's not a scientist, developing, marijuana. He's not really a marketer. He may know the political ropes, or did, back in the 80s. I suppose his name offers some heft to the board, but you just wonder. During his time in the Prime Minister's office from 1984 to 1993, his government introduced legislation that categorized cannabis as on the same level as heroin. However, by the time cannabis became legal in Canada, he had changed his view. In October 2018, he told CBC News, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, "It takes a while for certain people and certain things to catch up with reality and great social advances, as I've indicated. And great social advances, as I've indicated, says, come in waves. And this is one of the ways that I think we'll have Canada showing the way for the rest of the world." Yeah, so we legalize pot. Now, I don't know what you feel about that. I've always been of two minds. Part of me says you should be able to ingest or stick anything into your arm or smoke anything you want. It's basically your body and your business. On the other hand, certain drugs have caused a great deal of harm over the years. I leave that to your best judgment. But the I don't think marijuana should be glorified. Trying to come to grips with this. Mulrooney getting almost $14 million. The top 10 executives, top 10 executive officers in the cannabis sector, they are well paid. Brendan Kennedy, president and CEO of Tilray Incorporated, gets $31 million and change. Robert Dano, he's the chief operating officer of Acreage Holdings. He gets $19,531,000 and change. Kevin Murphy, he's the CEO of Acreage Holdings, gets $10,144,000 and change. Bruce Linton, former co-CEO and chairman of Canopy Growth Corporation in Canada, got $9,327,000 and change. Sebastian Saint-Louis, CEO of Hexo Corporation, got $8.8 million and change. But boy, these people collect big bucks for pushing marijuana. Oh boy. Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg. I was going to say Steve, but I guess it's Mark. Mark Zuckerberg Mark Zuckerberg is now under pressure from a group of
of experts, supposedly, that he paid to tighten hate speech rules on Facebook. Anytime you hear about things like that, that's not good news for freedom of speech. I always have to point out, even hear people in the movement sometimes repeating this lame brain thing about hate speech. Hate speech is absolutely undefinable. You know, what is hate speech? Well, hate speech is speech that somebody hates. It doesn't have a definition. It's not something clear that you can point to and define. It's mischievously loosey-goosey. It means whatever the accuser says it means. Okay, what's this about Zuckerberg?
Social media companies should be on the side of truth, professor says. Dozens of scientists doing research funded by Mark Zuckerberg say Facebook should not be letting U.S. President Donald Trump use the social media platform to spread both misinformation and incendiary statements. Talk about censorship. So this is from today's Globe and Mail. Facebook should not allow President Trump, the President of the United States, for heaven's sakes, to spread misinformation and incendiary statements. What is it? This is in the United States. This proposal is being made. What's an incendiary statement? Well, it means inflammatory. The mind boggles. An incendiary statement is an inflammatory statement, a call to arms, a call to action, a provocation to action. Great changes in societies have often come from such incendiary statements, urging people to get off their rear ends and do something about a particular thing. And I don't know whether it's just the pathological hatred of Donald Trump or just control freakery on the part of some of these so-called experts. The researchers including 60 professors at leading U.S. research institutions wrote the Facebook book incorporated. Chief Executive Officer, that's Zuckerberg, on Saturday, asking him to consider stricter policies on misinformation and on incendiary language that harms people, especially during the current turmoil over racial injustice. Or perceived racial injustice, or demands. I've had this reported to me by several people, having met black people, who said, I've grown up in this country. I haven't experienced any big problems on the basis of race. And, Canadians are an amazingly tolerant, passive, I'm going to say sometimes stupid, people. Quite welcoming. And what we've got is a lot of groupthink, and people, I think, who've been cooped up unfairly too long because of this coronavirus and the protests last weekend in Canada. There were a lot of protests in major cities, supposedly in support of this fellow Floyd. Speaking about Floyd, have you noticed? I think there'd be more funerals for this guy. When important people die, President of the United States was murdered or whatever, there's sometimes a memorial, a public memorial, where people can view the casket and pay their respects, and then there's a funeral. Well, I think that they've had a couple memorials in Minneapolis. There was a funeral in his hometown in North Carolina. Then there's a funeral in Houston. And I mean, are I ever going to bury this guy? And well, back to the letter from these 60 professors and scientists and experts that want more censorship at Facebook. The letter calls the spread of deliberate misinformation and divisive language contrary to the researchers' goal of using technology to prevent and eradicate disease, improve childhood education, and reform the criminal justice system. Well, so that was their goal, to reform the criminal justice system. Deliberate misinformation. Well, when do you know the information is misinformation? Well, first of all, how do you know it's misinformation? Certainly the Canadian government's party line on the COVID virus or the Wuhan flu has changed several times. So were the first pronouncements misinformation? Well, I suspect they actually were, but I don't know if they were deliberate. And, you know, proving deliberate misinformation is rather difficult. I mean, sometimes people believe controversial things, maybe even believe foolish things. And when they express those views, it's not normally that they're deliberately trying to spread misinformation. They believe in what they say. Oh, and divisive language. The professors want the divisive language banned. This is terrifying. What's divisive language? Well, actually, the way that is used today, if you disagree with me and you express your disagreement, I'll say, well, you're being divisive because we should all be on the same page. That is, everybody agree with me. It's one of those accusations that sounds bad, but has no substance. Like the accusation that statement is divisive. Yeah. What about the nonstop white bashing that we have heard for the last few weeks? Absolutely nonstop. Canada has systemic racism. Oh, we've heard this right from the very top. The United States has systemic racism. Well, what's that? Well, the system, I've heard blacks natter on about white supremacy in Canada. What do you mean white supremacy? Our immigration policies are basically white destruction. The replacement, the deliberate, calculated replacement of the European founding settler people of this country on the installment plan, and we've got a white supremacist elite in Canada? Well, they must be the weirdest white supremacists that ever walked the face of this earth. Anyway, the professors go on to say their mission is antithetical to some of the stances that Facebook has been taking. So we are encouraging them to be more on the side of truth and on the side of history. As we said in the letter, Deborah Marks of Harvard Medical School, one of the three professors who organized it, said, my God, talk about the arrogance, being on the side of truth. A true scholar seeks truth, but doesn't necessarily proclaim he or she has it for all eternity. The letter objects specifically to Mr. Zuckerberg's decision not to at least flag as a violation of Facebook's community standards Mr. Trump's post that stated, quote, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. In response to unrest in Minneapolis, over the videotaped killing of George Floyd. How would Donald Trump saying when the looting starts, the shooting starts, violates Facebook's community standards. Well, I mean, frankly, their standards are so loosey-goosey, anything could be used to ban them. So if you've been one of these people who has, you'll be frozen out of your Facebook account or being sent to Facebook jail for 30 days for some made-up infraction, you'll be told that your post violated community standards. Of course, you're never told how they violated community standards. Now, that's the lovely thing about censorship. In political correctees, what you've done is inappropriate. Well, yeah, but how is it inappropriate? Oh, I don't know. But it's inappropriate because I said so. That's the way censorship works. What I find quite appalling is that it was Zuckerberg's appointed panel of experts or whatever that were calling for this censorship. Free speech is under serious, serious attack. And I've warned about this, for quite a long time. And I particularly want people to understand it's under threat in the United States as well. I think, some Americans and certainly many idealistic Canadians, including people I know in the free speech movement, have more generous view of America than I think is really deserved in terms of the safety of our liberties. The enemies of freedom, frankly, never stop. They detest free thought, they detest free speech, and they detest dissent. And they're constantly on the lookout for ways to restrict free speech. Anyway, here is a if I might just go back for a moment to the allegation that Canada is white supremacist. And white supremacy, of course, is a bad thing, we're told. And, of course, it means, well, I don't know what it means. I'd like to apply a reasonable definition. White supremacy would seem to mean whites rule everything. The goal, white supremacy, or the goal would be to promote the white race and to make it superior or supreme and lord it over everything. I think that would be a fair definition. Now, I have often said when being accused of being a white supremacist that I am not. I choose to define white supremacy. It is imposing our views, our culture and on others. And I'm not in favor of that. I don't want radically different cultures in my country. But I don't want to go to other countries and say, well, you've got to act more like us. You've got to act white. Or you adopt our values. I think they should be free to live their lives the way they want with their culture. I generally don't want their culture over here. But I think they should be perfectly fine to pursue their culture in their country. I think that's fine. I go for that. And I would think that a policy that would try to impose our culture on others
in other countries, imposed now.
That would be, in my definition, white supremacy. And I am definitely not that. So I reject the label white supremacist. So, with that in mind, the story takes on, I think, kind of an interesting significance. UBC, that's the University of British Columbia, UBC President Santa Ono, you look at him, I think he's some sort of Oriental, declares war against white Canadian students on the business of white supremacy. Isn't it ironic that in a white supremacist country, supposedly, the president of a major university, and actually he's not the only one, is non-white? How does that happen? Well, maybe the thesis is wrong. Maybe we're not white supremacists. In fact, what's happening is the whites are being replaced by the scallywag policies are much of our political class. Now, this is an essay by Ricardo Duchesne, who was a professor of sociology at the University of Brunswick. And so, anyway, UBC President Santa Ono wants to be remembered as the man who ended white racism at UBC. And I'll digress again for a moment. You want to laugh or cry. White racism at UBC. UBC has for 30 years, the joke has been, do you know what UBC stands for? Well, of course, it's University of British Columbia, but no, it's a university of a billion, everyday street term for Chinese, but let's say a university of a billion Chinese. What, white racism at UBC? In many classes, you are a tiny minority if you're white. Well, oh yeah, white racism at UBC. You see, one of the scary things about this present hysteria, I find, this is just simply not being challenged enough. And it should be challenged. These just preposterous claims, let's say white supremacy. Like where? What are we talking about here? White supremacy. Okay. You would think that with all the looting and the official statistics showing black brutality against themselves and whites for decades, the billions of dollars white taxpayers have paid to create the best possible schools for blacks, the decades of affirmative action, the endless celebration of black culture in the media, the presence of blacks in almost every advertisement, the playing of rap music on Sunday morning on CBC radio, you would think that universities might reflect critically for once about black and white relations in the West in light of the destructive George Floyd riots, writes Professor Ricardo Duchesne. But instead, universities are already announcing that they will intensify their celebrations of the black race and their condemnation of institutional white racism. Just like Pornhub and every major corporation from Bank of America to Nickelodeon, the university presidents across Canada are announcing they will increase their commitment for the recruitment, retention, and support of black students, staff, and faculty, including the allocation of excellence chairs to black studies. This is lunacy. What about white studies? Oh, what do you mean white studies? Well, you're a racist or something? Let's examine one case from which these cited words are taken. The University of British Columbia, the third biggest university in Canada, it started with a rather odd tweet sent on May 31st by President Santa Ono to the University of British Columbia community of himself playing a song in his cello dedicated, quote, to George Floyd and everyone who is suffering today from racial injustice. The next day, he released an open letter to the UBC community, quote, "Together Against Racism and Injustice," announcing that his office plans to, quote, "diversify our community at every level through defined programs." What could Santa Ono mean by the words "at every level," considering that white students are currently a minority at the University of British Columbia? Every member in the Faculty of Arts is a leftist. There are numerous institutes and programs dedicated to diversity, and there is a massive equity and inclusion office with an army of 23 professional race hustlers working every day to assessing, planning, developing, and monitoring efforts to make UBC diverse and inclusive. 23 people draw a salary for what is this called? The Equity and Inclusion Office. Talk about useless eaters. Worse than that, if they were simply parasites, sitting around doing nothing and getting a salary, it would be, might be better for us than people bent on mischief. And Professor Deshane goes on, "We're not joking. Whites are already a minority at the University of British Columbia. In 2015, the Vancouver Sun reported that only 35% of the student population was white, while white males accounting for only about 1 in 6 students. The proportion of Chinese students alone was 39%. We can safely assume that there are fewer white students in 2020. Those figures were 5 years old. Will a lower percentage of white student applicants be admitted to make space for foreign students who pay significantly higher tuition fees? It's well known that university administrators lust after the much higher fees of international students to finance their hyperinflated salaries and bloated diversity offices. For the record, international students at UBC numbered 13,322 for the 2017-2018 calendar year, of which the majority were Chinese. Ono says he wants to, quote, ensure adequate resources to implement the goals and actions of the Inclusion Action Plan." The plan was implemented by the UBC's executive in December 2019. Its basic goal is to attract and retain the best and brightest students, staff, and faculty from around the world. Never mind the immorality of a program dedicated to enticing the best and brightest from the third world, we know that this program is inherently anti-white. Contrary-wise, why does Ono write in his letter to the UBC community that he wants to meet with the Black Caucus and Asian Canadian Community Engagement Group, as well as the Indigenous community, without a word about a meeting of Europeans as an ethnic group? I mean, talk about racism, all the while nattering on and wailing about white supremacy. Massive diversity infrastructure at the University of British Columbia. Quote, "We will be organizing a series of public engagements focused on anti-racism," says Ono. Yeah, well, if he's really an anti-racist, he should resign. Would this possibly entail, if not an all-out war against white students? Sorry, what could this possibly entail? The Equity and Inclusion Office, as I've said, this is Professor Ricardo Deshane, is already engaged every day in, quote, institution-wide efforts to create a supportive environment for working, learning, and living where respect, diversity, opportunity, and inclusion are valued. And this office is the tip of the massive iceberg. Here is a list of some of the academic programs and institutes dedicated to the principles of equity and social justice, ethnicity and immigration, equitable outcomes, transformative knowledge. Is your head spinning already? This is outright propaganda for mass third world immigration. Here are some of the institutes at the University of British Columbia. The Center for Culture, Identity, and Education. The Institute for Gender, Race, Sexuality, and Social Justice. That's a university program? The Center for Race, Autobiography, Gender, and Age. the Law and Social Justice Specialization, the LIU, L-I-U Chinese, Institute for Global Issues, the Center for Indian and South Asian Research, the Center for Korean Studies, the Center for Intercultural Language Studies, the African Studies Minor, M-I-N-O-R, I don't know what that means. I don't even know what the words put together mean. The Center for Asian Legal Studies. This is not all. You know, the University of British Columbia has academic programs and concentrations specifically addressing Aboriginal topics, and many courses with significant Aboriginal or Indigenous content. Those are Native Indians. All the courses in the Department of Sociology are dedicated to cultural Marxism, with a long list of courses on culture and power, race and ethnicity, immigration. The Department of History has a few courses on European history, which consists mostly in condemnations of white imperialism, whereas the descriptions of courses on Asia and non-whites generally are positively about their achievements, backed by multiple courses on, quote, ethnicity, race and nationalism, gender, sexuality and the body. it's actually pathetic. These are actually university courses. Migration, borderlands, and transnational history, power, culture, history, First Nations, Aboriginal and Indigenous history. The School of Social Work is all about, quote, critical transformative knowledge against white racism. basically, these are schools of subversion of what is left of the European founding settler people of this country. School of Social Work, instead of helping people, you would think social work would be helping people, you know, who need assistance in everyday living. It's actually about revolution against this white racism. There's a little Institute of European Studies which is distinctly preoccupied with immigration and the threat of right-wing populism in Europe. You don't believe me? Take a look at their speaker series for the calendar year 2019-2020. You will find titles such as Radical Diversity Post-Migrant Perspectives on Art, Culture, and Politics. Now that sounds like an exciting talk. Here's one of their talks. Right-wing populism and climate change in Europe. Oh no, you mean some right-wingers actually don't believe that we should shut down the economy for climate change? Oh, say it's not so, Joe. Oh my gosh, it gets better. Most of the clubs at the University of British Columbia are non-political in orientation, but the political ones are into radical leftist politics and diversity, and quite a few of them are dedicated to the promotion of the race of Asians, blacks, indigenous people, and other ethnic groups. A few clubs are about the culture of ethnic Europeans, but these are apolitical, folksy-like, and very subdued. The incredible bias that exists at UBC against white male students was well documented by the prolific student activist in Canada, Franz Coetzee. This was reported a few months ago. Coetzee, a philosophy student at UBC, has filed 11 anti-male, anti-white discrimination claims against UBC. Ono and Yip. Yip is a very ugly, fat Chinese woman. There's no point going over the rest of Ono's points. That's the University of British Columbia president, which consists of nothing more than robotic statements we read all day from dull academic administrators about diversity and inclusion. It's really irresponsible for someone whose expertise revolves around the rather trivial subject of eye inflammation, without any background in the social sciences and the history of Canada, to talk about the, quote, deeply rooted racism in Canada. That's Ono. He's an eye doctor. How can this charlatan insist that, quote, UBC itself is not immune to racism and injustice? Well, you actually agree with him. Yeah, a person like him is imposing anti-white racism on the university, but I'm sure that's not how he meant it. Um, One cannot but conclude that Santa Ono is seeking to wipe out every remaining feature of UBC's European Canadian character. Shane has this picture of Ono, and that his wife is Wendy Yip, this fat, not her, good-looking Chinese woman. When he put together the contrived tribute to George Floyd, did he even do some research about his case? Had he done so, he would have found out that Floyd was a meth addict, a cocaine addict, beat and robbed a pregnant woman, was a porn star, served 5 years in prison, tested positive for COVID-19, and resisted arrest. This is not to justify his death. I just find it beyond comprehension that UBC is planning to intensify the ethnocide of whites in honor of this character. Does he not know that a university is an institution created by whites for the purpose of advancing to the next generation highest achievements of human beings? Yeah, I mean, university was a white thing. Didn't develop in Asia, God help us, didn't develop in Africa. We're supposed to feel incredibly guilty because of it, because of our achievements. And here is this charlatan of a president of the university honoring this black meth addict, and it's only recently come out. He was also a porn star. I mean, a guy with that ugly face, I'm sure he wasn't starring with his face. Okay, I'll leave the rest of that comment alone. But and that's not, as Professor Deschaine says, that's not to justify his being murdered, if indeed that's what it was. Even a bad person doesn't deserve to be killed, to make him into some sort of a hero or martyr. A hero he was not. A defiant, black, drug addict and thug. And what happened at his arrest, as so often happens with blacks, that they behave stupidly. Instead of cooperating with the police officers, no matter what they think, whether they think this is an unjust arrest, where do you fight that? In court. You're not going to fight it out with the cop. As I mentioned last night, in another case, in Montreal, a defiant, surly black gets into trouble when he's pulled over by the police. Dumb move to be defiant and uncooperative. No matter what you think of the arrest, fight it out in court. That's where you're going to win it, if you're going to win. His wife, his Chinese wife Wendy Yip, who's a public figure hired as a UBC ambassador, actually tweeted the other day a link to an Asian group claiming that, quote, that the fact that so many people are avoiding Asian food is just a sneaky a new form of racism. Oh, I see. Couldn't it be just a matter of people's taste? Frankly, I don't like Indian food. Is that racist? No, it's my like. I like Japanese cooking. Well, does that make me racist? See, I don't like Indian food, but I like Japanese food. I also like French food and Italian cooking. That label of racism is just insane. People might be avoiding Chinese food for all sorts of reasons, including perhaps a fear that the filthy practices that occurred in Wuhan that very likely led to the leap of the coronavirus from the animal kingdom, from bats, probably transmitted through another animal to humans. People have every reason to be a little bit leery. Hey, we're supposed to avoid each other. We're supposed to stand 6 feet away from each other, right?
because the other person might have the coronavirus.
And it was
These race hucksters love to use the term racism. Also, Wendy Yip, and you might think that could be a nepotism, a conflict of interest. He appoints his own wife as a UBC ambassador. But anyway, she believes that people avoiding Asian food is a form of racism. She's been regularly implying in tweets that white Canadians are racist because they are eating less Asian food since the COVID-19 was unleashed upon the West by the Chinese Communist Party. Neither of them has ever objected to the Chinese demographic replacement and mass imprisonment and torture of the Uyghur minority in China. How about one talk about the incredible, inhuman, and barbaric practice of dog eating by the Chinese? 10 million dogs and 10 million cats are devoured by the Chinese each year, with thousands boiled alive. In understanding diversity, perhaps that might occasion a little bit of attention. Can I but conclude that the goal of Santa Ono is to bring to completion the genocide of European Canadians at UBC, at the same time that he promotes the stronger research partnership with the Communist Party of China. Here are some suggestions to ask this university president, who claims his office is open to the public. Why do you think that UBC needs to build even more its massive infrastructure against white racism? What evidence do you have that Canada remains deeply rooted in racism? Why do thousands of international students from Asia and Africa come to study at racist UBC? Why hundreds of thousands of immigrants crave to inhabit white-created countries if they suffer from white supremacists? Why does he never say a word about promoting diversity in Asia? This is by Professor Ricardo Duchesne. If you'd like a copy of this excellent thought piece, email me at paul@paulfromm.com. I'm going to take a very short musical break right now. This is some music by a great balladeer with a fantastic voice. This is Randy Travis, and you're on the funny side of me here on White Resistance Radio. I'm going to play a ballad that I think you'll really like. It's called Three Wooden Crosses. This is I find it extremely inspirational.
A farmer and a teacher, a hooker and a preacher, riding on a midnight bus bound for Mexico. One was headed for vacation, one for higher education, and two of them were searching for lost souls. That driver never ever saw the stop sign, and 18-wheelers can't stop on a dime. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That farmer left to harvest a home and 80 acres, the faith and love for growing things in his young son's heart. And that teacher left her wisdom in the minds of lots of children, and did her best to give them all a better start. And that preacher whispered, can't you see the promised land, as he lay his blood-stained Bible in that hooker's hand. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave it. world behind you is what you leave behind you when you go. That's the story that our preacher told last Sunday as he held that blood-stained Bible up for all of us to see. He said, bless the farmer and the teacher and the preacher. He gave this Bible to my mama, who read it to me. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, now I guess we know. It's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. This song doesn't neither do me and you. We're doing just fine, no matter what we try. We go round and round, getting no place. It's bringing me pain. This song doesn't rhyme. This song doesn't rhyme. Or I wish it could. I'm losing my faith. And you know that ain't right. We had our chance. Make love work out. This is the last waltz. This song doesn't rhyme. There once was a time when everything rhymed. We felt so thank you. pray. Since you gave me back my ring, I've been wondering that same thing. But she's okay, and I'm okay. Let's just leave it that way. I've relived every day. What did we do or say? Or fail to do? We weren't just kids at play. We tried to put it back, but the train don't fit the track. Now she's okay, and I'm okay. Let's just leave it that way. She's young and pretty, and she'll love again. And as for me, I don't have much to say. But I don't mind telling the world, I just lost one hell of a girl. But she's okay, and I'm okay. Let's just leave it that way.
And this is Paul Fromm. You're on The Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me here on AltRightTV.com or RightResistanceRadio.com.
In days of yore, from Britain shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our ghost, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. Be our lock and plenteous store abound. Charlie